all about the pendants, baby.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Excuse me. I believe you have my stapler.
Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
This is User Friendly, and I'm your host, Bill Sickens. Welcome to our show this week. Before we get going, I just want to make a comment of our condolences for all the people of Las Vegas. Living down there 2 years myself, it's an absolutely vibrant city, and it is so sad to see something like what has just recently happened with the shooting down there. And our thoughts and prayers and positive energy go out to everybody who has been affected, and it goes well beyond just those at the concert, friends, families, and everybody else. So please be thinking of the victims of that this week, and I hope that everybody is able to make a swift recovery. This week, we've got quite a show for you. We actually are coming from two different conferences, two very different kinds of conferences. Our veterans and technology reporter, Chaz, is down in Las Vegas at the Gaming Expo, and he's got an interview there of the CEO of a gaming company, and I'll let him get into the detail on that in a few moments. The other thing that we have this week is Snake River Comic Con, and we've talked about that for a couple of episodes, and the event was an absolute incredible success. We've got a number of people on that we'll introduce at the beginning of that segment, just different walks of life and everything, production to a variety of other things from that show, and just absolutely incredible where they are. We also have our Mr. Movie, Gary Wolcott, with a review of American Made, and we'll be back with all that after the break. This is User Friendly. Welcome back to User Friendly, one User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, also available on the iTunes Store and Google Play. Check us out. Joining me now is our veterans and technology reporter and our Las Vegas news anchor, Chaz Wellington, who is live on the floor of the Global Gaming Expo in Las Vegas. We talk about video games a lot, but we're going to be talking about a little bit of casino gaming. Chaz, welcome to the show.
Hello, this is Chaz Wellington with User Friendly Radio, Veterans and Technology segment. We're at the G2E Global Gaming Expo, Las Vegas, Nevada. And I have with me here today Jonas Dellen, CEO of Authentic Gaming. And Jonas, could you tell us a little bit about your product?
Thanks, Chaz, for giving us the chance to speak to you today. So Authentic Gaming is a B2B supplier to both the land-based and online gaming industries. And what we do is quite simple. We take a table in the land-based casino that is already operational, such as a roulette table. We install a number of cameras and audiovisual equipment into the casino that is completely seamless and very discreet, so it doesn't interfere with the casino's interior. We then connect those video streams from both video and data from the wheel, in the case of roulette, to our live gaming platform, which we have integrated and are integrating to several online operators who then have the online player. And through this process, an online player can play the live table in a land-based casino. Does it make sense?
Yeah, perfect sense. So within the gaming realm, do you have to apply the same betting limits as the land-based casino with your online game?
No. So actually, the land-based operator doesn't have to be involved at all in the risk or the management of player or the betting. And we can set those up depending on the wishes of the online operator.
Does this provide a reward system such as the casino has? And is it connected at all? So
yes.
You just said it's not connected to the provider.
Yeah, but it's connected to the... So the way that the business model is normally for us is that we have the land-based operator. And in a lot of cases, they don't have an online operation. And so what we enable them to do via our network of online operators is to extend the table in their casino. So a roulette table, for example, is traditionally limited to 7 concurrent players, physical. But through our technology and our online network of clients, it's a virtually unlimited number of players that can play that table. So the advantages, of course, now for the land-based casino is twofold. One is that they open up new revenue channels for a table which they're already paying for and staffing. And so without adding operational costs, they get a chunk of the revenue that we generate through our online operator partners. The second advantage for the land-based casino is that we integrate the branding and the imagery from the land-based partner into the game itself, so that when the online player opens the game, he sees he's going to play at a particular casino, he sees their logo, he sees their you know, what it looks like, as well as then to interact with the dealer in real time. So that casino really stays top of mind. And the audience is getting pretty big. So we only work with regulated online operators in Europe. And one of our customers is a company called Unibet Group PLC, which is a stock-listed company out of London. They have a database with 16 million registered users. And so the potential exposure of the land-based casino by being on a website like Unibet is quite significant.
All right, well, Jonas, I want to appreciate you for your time. Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Chaz, thank you so much for that. Next is our own Mr. Movie, Gary Wolcott, who is going to be reviewing American Made. And as always, let us know what you think of his review. We'd love to get your feedback. Gary, welcome to the show.
American Made stars Tom Cruise, and it's a seriously funny film based on a seriously serious subject. Sort of a true story, and keyword sort of a drug smuggler and a DEA informant named Barry Seal. You likely never heard of him, but he did play a small part in fingering the leaders of Colombia's infamous and very ruthless Medellin cartel. His true story isn't nearly as fun as this one. The film begins in the late 1970s and ends just after the mid-80s. Much of Seal's activity is connected to the Reagan-era push to support Nicaragua's anti-communist Contras. Seal's a pilot contacted by the CIA, given a business of his own and a fancy small plane. He's told to go photograph insurgent military locations in Central American nations that don't support the United States, and one of those is Nicaragua. Some of that is true about the real Seal, and some of it isn't. One day he's kidnapped by members of the cartel and coerced into smuggling cocaine into the U.S. Greed takes over and Seal agrees. Not sure if the kidnap part is totally true. The CIA, who the real Seal actually didn't work for, catches Seal smuggling, moves his business to a new location, and convinces him to smuggle guns to the Contras in Nicaragua. He finds a way to combine the gun smuggling business with drug smuggling. Cruz has two areas where he's exceptional. The first is heavy drama, like Born on the 4th of July, Rain Man, and A Few Good Men. These days, Cruz's dramatic films are kind of blah. He's a good actor, but Cruz poses more than he acts. His other exceptional skill is comedy. When he wants to, he can be flat-out funny and has an absolute blast being Seal as a loose cannon who lives on the edge of reality. When it comes to tossing off a wicked punchline, Cruz is flat good. These days, it's popular to buy things made American. When it comes to movies and theaters this week, buy American Made. I'm Gary Wolcott.
This is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to User Friendly. Joining us now live from the floor of the Snake River Comic Con are reporters Brian and Julia Rollins, as well as Warky, with a number of great interviews. Welcome to the show.
Hey guys, this is Brian reporting on my experience this past weekend at Snake River Comic Con in Pocatello, Idaho. I have to say that this was honestly the most fun that I've ever had at a convention so far. This was the first year for Snake River, so I kind of expected there to be minor hiccups here and there. But from my point of view, everything went smoothly. Tanglewist and the rest of the crew were willing to bend over backwards to make everyone comfortable, especially the guests, who honestly were my favorite part about the con. They ranged from actors such as Don Shanks and Parker Stevenson, voice actors like David Vincent and our very own Warky, producer Katrine McGregor, and special effects artist Crit Killen, and so many more. The amount of experience there in the film industry was astounding. The convention had panel rooms dedicated to things such as Harry Potter, Doctor Who, and even steampunk. They seemed to want to appeal to everyone attending, and they succeeded. I particularly enjoyed a live body paint demonstration by Mythica Von Griffin. The only small awkwardness that I could see is that the con was held in three venues, but they were all within a block of each other. The con had an ingenious solution to this, though, by using some school buses, cleverly named things like the Magic School Bus or the Night Bus from Harry Potter, to ferry everyone back and forth. Everyone I talked to had such a great experience, and so if you're able to, make sure to be at this con next year. You're able to find them at snakerivercomiccon.com. This is Brian reporting with User Friendly.
Hey everybody, welcome back to User Friendly. This is Warky here, and I am here today covering live at Snake River Comic Con, and I have a very special guest to introduce. I am here with famous author Christine Taylor Butler.
Aw, thank
Christine,
you.
Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm thrilled.
Now, Christine, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, just to start?
Okay, I'm originally from Ohio. I'm currently living in Kansas City, and I tell people I'm a recovering MIT engineer turned writer, so there you go. I'm both artistic and nerdy.
That's good.
It's a burden.
Oh, no, then you fit right in. Well, then let's start with just how did you get into writing in the first place? How did you get started in it?
Oh, I've been writing since I was a kid, but writing isn't considered a real job. Mm. Engineering is considered a real job. So
I've heard that.
I went to MIT and studied engineering, but I also got a second degree in art at the same time because I'm right brain, left brain, but writing still was not considered a real thing. And so I was working as an engineer and relocated to Kansas City, where I was the person translating what the artists and writers were doing for the technical departments, and a little jealous. And then I got a gift from the universe, which was the boss from down below, and I quit.
And that was
And they said, what are you going to do? And I said, I think, you know what, I'm going to write nerdy books for children. And they said, you'll be back. And I said, nah, I got a mortgage. I got to make this a real job. And so I quit around 2000, and I've been writing for 17 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
So that makes you like 21.
Thank you. I really love you. Yes. I am, well, I've got a kid who's 22 now, so.
Oh my golly, wow.
How old can I be and still be legal?
I'm not sure. Clones.
There's a clone, yes.
Started young. Okay, well, then I know a lot of people want to know, just how did you first get published? Do you remember the first time you got published? I mean, I would assume you would.
I do. You know, I went through years of rejection. Sometimes it was the best thing for me, because I go back and read that stuff now and go, oh. This is pretty wretched stuff. But I met the head of Highlights for Children. And he invited me to one of their conferences where I met my first editor. And, you know, I was still brand spanking new, and I'd been struggling with rejections for about 3 years. And then I got an email saying, you feel like writing? And I said, I don't know how to write early readers. And she said, yeah, but I'm a darn good editor. And those were my first two books. And the very first one, about a boy who wants to jump rope, sold about 100,000 copies for Scholastic.
And oh my gosh.
That was
that's great.
And every book is like starting over, though. You can have a lot. I have 80 books out now, but
only
80. but you know, every new book is like starting over, finding the right editor, and so there you go.
Wow, that's exciting. See, that's why, I mean, you've got to realize how famous you are.
You've got to be passionate about it. You know, there are a lot of people who go, oh, yeah, I wrote a children's book. And I was like, no, you know, you have to put your butt in the chair. And, you know, I know people who are more famous than I am, and they are still getting rejections. And I said, you have to really believe in what you're doing. And, you know, I take class. I'm always taking class because there's always new things to learn, and I'm learning from more experienced authors. And so it really comes down to perseverance. You know, if you don't give up, the world won't give up on you.
That's the best advice I've ever heard for rejection. Seriously. So, now, I know that right now the Lost Tribe books are very popular, and, you know, you're part of all of this incredible, like, history in a way. I mean, you're making children history, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Has the fame gotten to your head yet?
No, I have family and two kids who would smack that down in a minute, so I still take out the garbage, and I'm still paying the bills and the school loans. And no, I don't want to be that kind of writer. I don't want to be the kind of person where you can't go outside in your bathrobe because of paparazzi there. You know, when you're writing, you need large blocks of alone time to kind of keep the, you know, when you're world building, you have to keep that world in your head. And I have friends who are really well known, and 75% of their job is marketing.
Wow.
And dealing with the fandom, and I love fans, but I need large blocks of time to write, and so I'm that quiet, you know, falls under the radar kind of person.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Okay, I have to ask a very strange question.
Okay.
If you could be a pie, what flavor pie would you be?
Oh, you know, I would say apple pie, but that's so ubiquitous. I'd be like a peach pie, you know, kind of sweet, kind of tarty. Because
you're such a peach.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'll buy that with some whipped cream on top.
Totally. Now, do you have any advice that you would give somebody who may be starting out in the industry of writing that wants to be a writer, that other than perseverance, I mean, I know that you've been saying that for the rejection part of it, is there any advice that you would give now or even tell yourself back then?
Yeah, respect the process, really. I got to meet the person who was Stephen King's first editor, and he gave an analogy that I really love, which is there are a lot of people who treat writing like they want to be brain surgeons without going to medical school, and then they want to practice on people and the patients are dying, so they get into critique groups of other people who don't want to go to medical school, and they can't figure out why, when they're critiquing each other's work, their patients are dying. This is hard work. People think it's intuitive, and one or two people might get lucky and come out with something really good. But it's really hard work. And in children's, you know, I'm also worried about grade level and which words are appropriate for certain ages or what reading level there are. But beyond that, there's kind of a process, and so learn from people who are better. And the best advice is you're going to get a lot of rejections. You have to, a lot, and they're not personal. Sometimes it's the wrong editor who doesn't get your work, so you keep shopping around like you're shopping for a boyfriend or a spouse. Look for someone who gets your work. Sometimes there's just not enough space for all the books that are being written on a publisher's list, and so a lot of times it feels personal, but it's not. So you do what I do, which is you put the phone down, then you pick it back up to make sure there's a ringtone, then you put it back down, then you start swearing, and then you send it out again, and then you start working on your next project. You know, you look for that thing, but you know, be true to yourself and take class. You know, really learn how it works and learn what the rules are, so when you're breaking rules, you know what rules you're breaking. But never give up, never surrender. I'm sorry. Just no.
You know, as nerdy as it sounds, it's perfect.
You know what? Yeah. It's like resistance is futile. If you are born to be a writer, you can't not write. You just can't. You can't give it up. The characters will wake you up in the middle of the night. I have a dedicated office where I go and write in solitude. But yeah, write. Write like nobody's going to read it. That'll be the best thing you've ever done.
That's awesome. Christine, thank you so much for being us part of our interview and just being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's
I appreciate
wonderful.
That.
Again, this is Warky for User Friendly. Visit us on Facebook and Twitter at One User Friendly and our website at userfriendlyshow.com.
This is Brian Rollins and Julia Rollins here with Don. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
Okay, my name is Don Shanks, and I'm an actor, stuntman, stunt coordinator. I've been doing it about 45 years.
Wow, that's amazing. So how did you get started in acting and stunt performing?
Well, how I got into movies was I was doing a play at the Salt Palace, and at the time I was playing a guy who was 65. I was 22 at the time.
Okay.
Makes you feel good.
And he was overweight and what. Anyway, I did special effects makeup.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so after the performance, this guy came back and said, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, the performance, this, and that. And I started peeling off like Mission Impossible type thing.
Nice.
And he goes, wow, you look a lot different. And I had a receding hairline, and I pulled it off my hair down to my waist.
Wow.
He goes, wow, you look a lot different. So anyway, about 3 months later, he gave me a call, and he said, there's a movie company in town and they need some special effects makeup.
Okay.
And I go, okay. So I called them, and it was someone had to be tore up by a bear.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Broken leg, this. Yeah. Anyway, I go, do you need any actors? And they go, well, we need an Indian. And I go, well, I'm part Indian. They go, well, you got to be able to wrestle a bear. And I go, okay.
Any experience with that before? Or
no.
Oh, okay.
No. But I figured I could do it as well as anybody else could.
Nice.
Why not?
Why not?
It's amazing. So it seems like you've had, since you've been in the industry so long, you've had so many roles. What's something you had a lot of fun doing or you're specifically really proud of?
Well, there was one that I did 2 years ago called mm-hmm. Like Sun. It was with John Schneider.
Okay.
You know, and he has a little studio in Louisiana. And I starred in that one, and it was a lot of fun to do. But Grizzly Adams was a lot of fun, the series. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in Last Mohicans. There I got to show off a lot.
Oh, nice.
And then the Michael Myers in Halloween 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had fun with just about everything.
That's awesome. It must be fun. It must be amazing having fun doing what you do every day.
Oh, yeah.
That's
I get to play in somebody's yard.
All right, so what? Oh, go ahead.
How do you think that someone survives as a stuntman over time? Because it could be a rough job, and you can get injured a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So what would you say, how do you get through it and survive for this long in the industry still
doing it?
Not
take it too seriously. And if you get hurt, you get hurt. I've had fingers cut off. I've had bones broken, you know, teeth knocked out, and I've never missed a day of work.
Wow. You got to be a tough guy then, huh?
Well, you just, either that or stupid.
To keep going with it after that.
Yeah, you just have to, you know, it's like, you know, I would get bitten by the animals and whatnot, and you just don't take it personally. You know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, when it happens, it happens. So you rub some dirt on it and keep going.
Awesome.
That's amazing, yeah. So I've heard of this story about a bear that you need to that you should tell us. It's really amazing.
Okay, well, the bear that we used on the series, we used to sit at the table. She had this barrel that was cut down. She'd sit there at the table with us, and we'd eat.
The bear would.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And so on this one episode, and she's taught that she can only touch what's hers.
Makes
That's
sense.
Only what's in her plate. So anyway, I'm supposed to be mad at Denver Pyle. He's playing Mad Jack, and you know, staring at him, and everybody else is eating, and I'm not eating mine, and she's sitting next to me. And so she finishes hers, and she looks around, and she notices that I'm not eating, right? So she looks at me, and looks at the plate, looks at everybody else, nobody said anything. So she puts her head down and starts, and like, oh no, no, I'm not supposed to do that. And nobody said anything, it's like, oh, okay. So she goes back. And pretty soon I see her lips and her tongue going like this on my plate. And she's moving it across the table. Right? And she slides it into her plate. Now it's hers.
Now it's hers. Now she has the permission to eat it. That's awesome. Wow. So what recommendations do you have for anyone who wanted to get started in either acting or stunt work?
Well, do anything that comes up, you know. If you sit at home and wait for something to happen, it's not, you know.
Be available, maybe.
But go out and learn stuff.
Oh, okay.
No matter what. I mean, if you're being a grip or whatever, you know, you learn something and people know you.
Okay.
And then it's like when something comes up, you know, you never know.
So try to get on as many projects as you can.
Yeah. Work.
To get your name out.
Years ago, I did. It was a traveling show with the New York City Ballet, and I was a technical director of a theater, and I was did lighting design.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was with Jacques Demois, and there was a group of people from Ballet West. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I was in Illinois at the time. And so working and planning to come to Utah, then I worked for the ballet for a little bit, you know, when I was going in college. And then last year, I was the fencing master for their Romeo and Juliet.
Wow.
So everything, you know, you just...
Yeah.
Just take all the different skills that you have.
Right.
So you can share those later.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, that's awesome. It sounds like you have so many wonderful stories. I wish we had a bit more time.
Well, it is. It's been... we had this old special effects guy.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Harry Wolman. He was one of the Keystone Cops in silent movies. He doubled.
Okay.
I mean, he was with Douglas Fairbanks. All the, you know, people came up. He doubled Charles Laughton in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. He was Clark Gable's double. And he said, I've loved every day of my life, and I wouldn't change one day.
That's amazing. Oh, thank you for these. That's definitely a neat experience to share. And I'm glad we got the chance to talk to you. And definitely thank you for your time. And again, this is Brian Rollins and Julia Rollins here with User Friendly.
This is User Friendly, one User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. We are going back live to the show of the Snake River Comic Con for several more great interviews.
Hey, welcome back to User Friendly. This is Brian Rollins and Steve Warky Nunez here at Snake River Comic Con in Pocatello, Idaho. We're here today with Mythica Von Griffin. You can say hi and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, my name is Mythica Von Griffin, and I was on the TV show Skin Wars, which is the first body painting reality competition TV show. It originally came out on the Game Show Network, and then last year it was sold and got on to Netflix, which has 88 million plus subscribers. Really, you know, I think it's more than that because, come on, how many of us have Netflix? And there's like 20 million people under that one account.
It's, of course.
Well,
yeah.
I'm no.
So many people do share Netflix, which is, so you probably have way more people in Blizzard than that.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's amazing for you. I want to ask, how did you get started in the body art? How did that come about?
So a friend of mine by the name of David Caballero is a body painter in Denver, Colorado. He works at a store called Disguises, which is a local costume shop that we have that's there. And I was going in to get zombie makeup for the Denver Zombie Crawl. We'd broken the Guinness Book of World Records several times.
Oh, wow.
Over 20,000 zombies. It's
that's
a lot
amazing.
Of zombies.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm actually doing that next weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he was like, Mythica, you know, you're an artist. Why don't you come to the body jam? And I'm like, well, I don't, you know, I don't really have the paints and stuff for it. And he's like, it's okay. Just bring your brushes. And so I went and I put out a call on my Facebook page and I said, I need somebody to paint. Somebody come, you know?
Okay.
And the most beautiful, talented, sexy, incredible woman I know actually showed up for me to get painted. She didn't take her clothes off or anything. She had like a tube top because it was in the middle of summer and stuff.
All right. Fair enough.
And she let me paint on her back. But it was the most beautiful, amazing, wonderful thing, and I was looking for something that combined my spirituality and my art together. And that was really the thing that became it for me.
Okay. That's amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
What a cool experience just to be able to find some. First off, the person who responded. So that,
right?
I mean, that's kismet right there.
Right, yeah.
And then the fact that you got to do something like that is just really.
I love you so much. You used the word kismet. Oh, it's such a beautiful word.
I think so. It's one of my favorite words to use. So.
Yes. And if anyone's listening and they don't know what it is, Google that shit.
All right, definitely reach out and find out what kismet is. All right. So I imagine you've been an artist for most of your life. What?
Yes.
Where do you find the passion for your art? What? Why do you do art? What is it for you?
Well, the thing is that when I'm doing my artwork, I call it talking to God.
Okay.
You can call it the divine.
Yeah.
You can call it Allah, you can call it goddess, you can call it God, you can call it really whatever the heck you want to call it. But, you know, for me, when I'm doing my artwork, I trance out and I connect in a very deep, nonverbal way to the creative force of the entire universe. And what happens when I do that, like, all kinds of really cool things happen. Like, for example, I was painting somebody the other day, and I painted a wolf on them, and they're like, how did you know that that's like my favorite animal in the whole wide world, right? And I'm like, I didn't, you know. And I'll just do that, and I'll paint something else on somebody else, and they're like, how did you know that multicolored dragons are my favorite thing in the whole wide world? And I'm like, I didn't, you know, it's just what came to
it
me.
Just happens, yeah.
So there's a lot of those synchronicities that happen when I'm body painting people, and it just happens to be their thing or something that really is deep or it's connective, or, you know, it happens to be something that they connect with on a really different kind of level.
Do you feel like when you're trancing out, you know,
oh,
for
yeah.
part of it,
mm-hmm.
I mean, do you feel this sort of paradigm shift? Like it's not, like it's no longer you, like you're outside of it, or is it just...
So I describe it as hyper-listening.
Okay.
So basically and literally, all I'm doing is listening for the next brushstroke that I'm supposed to do.
Wow.
So sometimes either I'll get something visual like paint a V here, or the next series of things that you're going to do, and this is not auditory, it's like in a visual format.
Okay, yes.
I get that you're supposed to do these shadows on all the scales, or you're going to make a line that looks like this swooping motion, and I'm like, okay. So I just make that swooping motion, and then all of a sudden I see something else. And so literally all I'm doing is just listening. What is the next brushstroke I'm supposed to make? So I'm not thinking at all. I'm listening. What's the next brushstroke? What's the next movement? What's the next color? What's the next...
That's an incredible way to paint.
And
what
so
a beautiful
I'm,
way
and
paint.
So I'm not actually using my left brain at all whatsoever to paint. Like a lot of people are like, oh my God, how did you come up with that? And I'm like, I listened. And, you know, I asked, sometimes my hand will move of its own volition, and I'm watching my hand move, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm doing that now. And so I just call it hyper-listening, because I'm not thinking at all. I'm just, my arm is moving, my hand is moving, I see a color, I see a series of things that I'm supposed to do, and I just do whatever that is.
What a unique perspective.
Even though I have no idea what's going to look like in the end.
That is amazing. So it seems like it's almost sort of a spiritual experience for you when you're
That's
doing
why
that.
I'm saying, okay. You know, that's why I call it talking to God, because like I'm like, who knows what's going to come out of it.
No, thank you for that explanation. I love it.
Yeah.
That's
such a unique experience that I've never heard of before, and mm-hmm. I love it. So another question I have is, what advice do you have for others in your field or just other artists in general?
Quit bloody judging yourself. My God, stop it. Just like, you know, no happiness is going to come out of comparison, you know? There is no such thing. You know, the only thing that you are challenging yourself on is the last thing that you did, right? And what you're going to express or do, or even any of your practice sessions or anything that you do, it's not the end of your life. It's not the end of your career. It's just taking one step in front of the other, and you don't compare your last drawing to your next drawing, because you learn something from your last mm-hmm. drawing or painting. And after you do that one, it's going to be the best, then you do the next one. And that becomes even better or more amazing because you practiced or you did whatever. But for God's sakes, everybody just needs to stop comparing themselves, because there's no happiness to be found in it. And it's useless.
No, thank you for that. And that sounds like advice that can be ascribed to all aspects of
that. Yeah, not just that one. I mean, everything. I'm going to take that advice to heart myself. I mean,
yeah, there's. You're not making the world a better place by comparing yourself, right? At all whatsoever. Because, number one, we each have a very unique perspective, and nobody has that perspective, right? Nobody has our life experiences and has seen the things that we have seen through our eyes and experienced our life as we have experienced it. So there's nobody who can express what we express because of that. And, I mean, honestly, if you think about it, you know, who we are each as individuals is the result of billions of years of evolution and atoms and molecules smashing together. On top of that, each individual human being is the result of millions of people having sex that accidentally resulted in who we are, right? We won the gene pool lottery. Each individual who is currently alive had, there were trillions upon trillions of gajillions. I mean, that's an actual, gajillions is an actual number of permutations to actually create the human beings that we are today. And we forget that significance in our lives when people are comparing each other. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, all of creation worked together to make you. You know?
It's true.
So just, you know, stop. It's not necessary. Like, just realize that you are just an incredible gift. I mean, even if you're an atheist, like, scientifically, you can look at all that and be like, in awe and wonder of what was created with you as a human being.
Awesome.
So just stop comparing. Just please, everyone quit, for God's sakes, or you know, for even no God's sakes. Like, just stop. Right, right. This is how we're going to become happy people, is by stopping comparison.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that perspective. I've never really thought about that myself, but I love it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Me too. There it is. You're welcome. Everyone, spread that shit everywhere.
Of course, we'll do the best we can. And so, as you said, you're most well-known for Skin Wars, which can be found on Netflix.
Yeah.
Everyone can access it there.
Season one.
Are there future seasons planned for it in the works?
I believe that Game Show Network is trying to sell Skin Wars to Netflix.
Oh, okay.
To continue the line.
To continue the production.
Yeah, okay. Continue production.
Wow.
That's the last thing that I personally know of. Rumor mill, you know.
And would you be involved in a season two? Like,
No.
She had her season.
I had my season. I was voted off of the island.
Oh, okay.
You know, I came away with the fact that I was, you know, a fan favorite and voted as a fan favorite and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I love that Netflix allows people to see me brand new every single day, and that people contact me on Facebook and Instagram all the time and like, oh my gosh, I just saw you, you know. So to them, what happened to me 3 years ago is instantaneous to them. You know, it just happened today, yesterday.
And so mentioning Facebook and Instagram, I was wondering how followers of the show can find more of your work, more of your artwork.
The easiest way is Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's I Am Mythica, IAMMYTHICA. And you can contact me directly there. There's so many people like, I don't know if you'll ever see this message or not. And then they're like flabbergasted when, oh my gosh, you! It's really you. You responded. And I'm like, yep, it's me. It's my account. So
it may take a bit, but I'll get to you.
Right?
Well, that's great to know. No, well, thank you again so much. And again, this is Mythica Von Griffin with us today at Snake River Comic Con in Pocatello. And this is Brian and Warkey signing off.
Bye.
Welcome back to User Friendly. This is Brian and Julia Rollins here at Snake River Comic Con with Aaron Leach. So Aaron, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a transgender comic book artist. I do the comic book Happy Cat that's sold on Comixology. So it's just go Comixology and enter Happy Cat as a search, and you'll see the comic in there.
So is that Comixology.com?
Yes, that's Comixology.com.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely check that out. So how did you get started in doing comic books? What's your history on that?
Well, I always wanted to be one.
Okay.
So I was going to a lot of conventions. And submitting work, and I ran into Bob Chirac, who was editor at Dark Horse Comics at the time, and went on to be editor on the Batman books over at DC. and I just kept talking with him, showing him work, and he just kept sending me back, you know, going, well, go work on your buildings, go work on this, go work on that. And one convention up there in Portland, I was showing him work, and he says, oh, I think I've got a fit for you, and he walks me over to talk to Tom DeFalco, who was editor-in-chief at Marvel Comics at the time, and I got started in the Marvel Assistant Artist Program.
Okay.
And that would have been about 1994.
And so as part of that, I read that you worked on Spider-Man, is that right?
Yeah, primarily my work was on Spider-Man, ghosting other artists like Mark Bagley and Randy Immelman, many of the artists that were currently on Spider-Man at that time, and it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I learned inking from Joe Sinnott himself.
Oh,
wow. So, you know, one of the greatest inkers ever.
That's awesome, yeah.
And, you know, met a lot of good friends, Jimmy Palmiotti and all of them, and had a really great time. And then in 1997, when the bankruptcy happened, mm-hmm. they ended the assistant program. And a lot of new hires got let go.
Yeah.
That's what happened. So then I had to, you know, nobody knew who I was because when you're the assistant, you don't get any credit, of course.
So you had experience but no actual credit.
Yeah, I had experience but no resume. Yeah.
But did you have like a portfolio that you could show people?
Yeah. But at that time, because comic sales had really dropped off, like, and we're still never really recovered from it. You needed experience to get work. They wanted somebody that already, you know, have you ever worked on a comic before? You know, how do we know you make, you know, can hit deadlines and that sort of thing. So I started out in the horror industry under my own name, under Arcana, Chaos, mm-hmm. and a lot of those horror publishers that were really, you know, very popular there in the latter 90s and early 2000s. And I did a lot of work that way. Even for Image, I worked on their horror line for a while. Wow. Then I got to talking with Chris Ryle over at IDW, and he was like, I really need somebody that's very deadline-oriented to take over Transformers, Hearts of Steel, because the book was massively behind, and he'd heard my reputation of, you know, Aaron will work, you know, sun up to sundown, you know, day in, yeah, and gets books in on time, and I did. I literally worked 4 months, no days off, 18-hour days, and got the book in on time. I, you know, kind of one of my crowning achievements because Chuck Dixon was the writer of the comic. And,
yeah.
You know, he's one of the all-time great writers in comics out there. So I was kind of feather in the cap. And then, you know, that progressed me on to Star Trek The Next Generation, where I had a lot of fun on that comic. Just probably too much fun on that comic. So much so to the point we were going to do a spinoff series. Where it was going to be like a Mirror Mirror, but not quite, where we were going to use the concept of Wesley Crusher being a traveler, and that was going to alter the timeline. And so we made the Enterprise a Dreadnought-class starship, the classic ship as a Dreadnought. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The cover's hanging in someone else's house right now because it got purchased.
Did Will Wheaton ever find out that you were doing this storyline?
I don't know if he did or didn't. Paramount was aware of it. But then, you know, kind of the way Transformers got kind of bumped due to the movie.
Yeah.
They were starting to see the stuff out of the Transformers movie because there was a toy line with Hearts of Steel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're very, very rare. So if you find them out there, they're outrageously expensive.
I'll keep my eye out.
But if you find one, I'll sign the package.
This guy loves Transformers.
I do have a lot of
toys.
Yeah,
I will totally sign the packages on that because a lot of that's my design work.
Yeah, the ones I have are just from the new movies.
Yeah, and that's what bumped our line was the new movies. Well, the same thing happened on Star Trek. They started to see real images of what was going on with the reboot movie, and they went, well, we would rather you did something with this instead and not another, you know, alternate kind of storyline comic.
So it's not competing with itself.
I really wanted to be an editorial at about that time. I thought, you know, I'm kind of getting, you know, a little older. Mm-hmm. So I went to college. I went to the Academy of Art University in San Francisco.
Oh.
And I got a Bachelor's of Fine Arts in Illustration and I minored in Western Civ.
Awesome.
While I was there. Cool. And then I got out, you know, and started beating the pavement for a job and was like, you know, oh my God, you know, I remembered how much I hated beating the pavement for a job.
Yeah, nobody loves that.
Yeah, it's just like, wow, I forgot how much I hated this. So I, you know, just sitting there watching TV and I literally have smarty little comments for all the politicians on the news and in
That's
the media.
Fun. Oh,
yeah. And my girlfriend was like, you know, you sit here and you make these comments day in, day out. Why don't you do a comic book where you get to really throw this voice out there?
Huh.
And I had this cat, Tiger, at the time, very beloved cat. Well, later on that year, Tiger died.
Oh, sorry.
I was very, very heartbroken over it. So I went, you know what? That's going to be the push for this comic. And I kind of found my voice through the cat. in there. So very debaucherous cat. You need to be 17 or plus. You're supposed to be to read the book. Yeah.
What a great memorial to your cat.
Yeah, it is. And you know, there's things that I write about that was very much the cat. He really did some of these things.
So you did personify the cat.
Yeah, I did personify the cat. Awesome. But I do.
But you're also yourself through the
cat. Yeah, I'm actually three different characters in this comic.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the cat is me. Mm-hmm. There is a representation of me when I was him in the book, too.
Okay.
And then there's a character called Tokyo Ass Kicker 69. Of course. She's the transgender character, and I'm showing her go through transition in the comic.
It's almost kind of working through what you went through yourself.
Yeah, she actually starts out as part of the villains.
Oh, no.
So maybe not exactly. Like
well, no, it was because, you know, in high school, I was very much a Reagan Republican, and then I went and I served Army Special Forces, and I saw what was going on in the world. I saw what we were really doing in the world, and I went, oh, my God, I have been so wrong. I've had this so wrong, and I totally flipped sides in that, and I went, you know, that is kind of my journey. I was over here. I did have that attitude, even about myself, you know, because I thought this was, being transgender was a disease. Didn't know what, had never heard transgender until I was in my 30s.
Okay.
But, so that's why Tokyo, she starts out with the villains, but then...
And turns it around.
Yeah, it's Tiger that turns her around and says, you know,
It's like different parts of your personality kind of warring with
each other. Yeah, I have the cat. He's an avid video game player, and he's really good at it. I am not good at video games.
It's okay.
You know, I spend more time drawing, you know, than playing video games.
Makes sense. Yeah. That being your career, so yeah.
Yeah. But that's how those two kind of meet, is he's, well, he's beating up on her in the game very, very much so, and she's upset. And
that sounds like me and Brian's relationship.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just how it all goes out. The story's really neat. There's one issue that is not on Comixology, mm-hmm. and that's the fabled issue 5.
Oh, why is it not there?
Because I finally took a comedic swing at Kevin Smith for his joke that he did in Chasing Amy about anchors being tracers.
Okay.
So I had that comment literally put the Aaron character out of work, and Tiger gets pissed, so he gets on a plane and he goes down to Kevin Smith's house and kicks his ass about the whole thing. And it's awesome. It's really hilarious.
Yeah, sure.
And a lot of people that have actually read the comic said this is probably the funniest one you've ever done out of the whole series.
Uh-huh.
But Comixology was so afraid that Kevin would sue. And this was despite the fact that Kevin turned around and very publicly said, no, publish the book, you know. I make fun of everybody. And if somebody can't make fun of me and you know, in return, then what am I doing, you know, in this business kind of thing. But Comixology said, no, we don't want the liability.
Oh, that's fine.
So upon request.
It's almost like rappers where they, if they beat on each other, they sell more records, right?
Right, yeah.
So he's like, come on.
Go ahead, yeah.
Publish it, and then your publishers will let you.
Yeah, they're not even the publisher, they're actually the distributor. Mm-hmm. I'm the publisher.
Oh, that's true, yeah, that's right.
They just wouldn't do it. So I give it away for free to anybody that asks for it.
So you have it in print?
I do not have it in print.
Okay.
Cappy Cat is not in print. It's a digital-only comic.
Okay.
But it is a free download. So when you buy Happy Cat, you get a download for free of the comic. Okay. You can take it anywhere with you, read it on the plane, because that's what I think digital should be. You should get kind of a something that's yours to hang on to.
Yeah.
Instead of just reading it like you would.
Just being able to access it.
Yeah, and you have to be online and that kind of crap.
Yeah.
I do not believe in that. I guess it's fine for other companies, but I just didn't think it was fine for mine.
Awesome. Okay. Sounds like you've had a lot of experience in the art world, and I definitely want to read Happy Cat. I haven't myself, and recommend our listeners to as well. But thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to share with us?
Not that I can think of.
Mark
had
a question that he's been asking everybody, and he wants to know, if you could be a pie, what kind of pie would you be, and why?
Mm. I would be a cherry pie.
Cherry?
Yes. Having undergone hormones... Everything, mm-hmm. and I mean everything, is different. So I'm very cherry in the world right now.
Nice.
So I would be a cherry pie.
That makes sense.
I like it. Thank you so much.
Right, thank you.
All right, again, this is Aaron Leach. This is Brian and Julia Rollins with User Friendly.
This is User Friendly. One User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to User Friendly. Well, that was an intense show.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe how many people are... Guys, you know, and this was Brian's first show that he covered. I think he did an absolutely incredible job.
He was excellent, yes.
I wasn't surprised. I knew when we first met him and talked to him that he'd do well, but I didn't know he'd do that well. So that was really kind of cool. But we got a lot of very interesting personalities out there, some a little more peculiar, but I think they're all a lot of fun-loving people and seem to really, really love their things. You know, when you look at all of these different disciplines, I know, Gretchen, you're a writer, and Jeremy, you've done some art, both commercial. Gretchen, you've done fine art, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and you did a comic book series as well.
Yeah.
So you guys know what goes into all of this.
There's a lot of work.
There is a lot of work.
And it's kind of interesting to just hear how much is out there. I think these people are all very talented, and it's kind of really cool to be able to talk to some of them a little bit. Well, this is User Friendly. One User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, available for download as a podcast on both iTunes and the Google Play Store or on userfriendlyshow.com. Check us out. Give us your feedback. User Friendly, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly is copyright 2017, User Friendly Media Group, Inc., all rights reserved. Music used under license. Opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of User Friendly Media Group, Inc., or this station.